Blog Talk Radio.
Johnny always says you can just screw so much and drink so much.
Hawks are still shorthanded. Taves, though, moves in on the left wing. Checked by Hamhuis. And Bieksa banks the puck ahead. Here's Burrows at center. Checked. Here comes Taves shorthanded again. In with Hossa. Taves drags the puck to the middle. Hossa on the backhand. Luongo stopped it. Taves scores! Jonathan Taves! Hawks are... Patrick Kane gets the puck. Sends it across for Campoli. Went over his stick, but Ryan Johnson clears the zone. Hamhuis intercepts. Dumps the puck back in. Campoli has it. Flips it. Burrow steals. Cutting in. Shoots. Scores! They slayed the Dragon! Alex Burrows! 5:22 into overtime! Game 7 goes to Vancouver! And the Canucks are off to the second round! Burrows bags it! And the Canucks celebrate. They've done it. They've clobbered the Hawks.
How's it going, everybody? It is Chris Block here, the Third Man in Radio, here on this Monday night, May the 9th, 2011, 8:01 here in Chicago. It is the Third Man in Radio. Back again, flying solo, it appears, tonight. It'll be just me. We had we were efforting a guest, and now it appears Superstar will not be able to join us, so we'll move forward solo here tonight, and a bunch of things to talk about. Of course, we're going to do, if you caught the preview of the show, that we were going to focus more or less tonight on reader emails, listener emails, and we'll go through those. And I want to back up to last week. We had Mike Peck and Al Simagli on, a lot of great feedback to that show, so that's good. We want to back up to a couple of things that Al and I specifically talked about, which is the Troy Brouwer, his future with the team, with the Chicago Blackhawks, and as well as Nicholas Jalmerson. We have questions about those two guys as well. Not a whole lot going on right now. Of course, the IIHF World Championships, we are entering the playoff rounds, which will begin on Wednesday. For those of you who have missed it, Blackhawks who are involved, Cristobal Huet, his tournament is done now, the goaltender for France. They've been eliminated. But moving forward, Michael Frolik on the Czech Republic, ex-Blackhawk Jack Skilly on the United States, Marcus Kruger on Sweden, and Tuomo Ruutu, ex-Blackhawk on Finland. Of course, a lot has been made. We'll talk a little bit about it later on. Mathis Olim on Norway, and Slovakia is out. So Marian Hossa is done. Marian Hossa. You don't have to worry about Mary Hossa anymore. He didn't do much, but his season is now officially over. As Slovakia, the host country for this tournament, has been eliminated. So that'll begin on Wednesday, May the 11th. Czech Republic and the United States will play at 9:15 Chicago time. And Sweden will play Germany at 1:15. And then on Thursday, Finland against Norway and Canada against Russia. Very much looks like your semifinals would then be on Friday. The winner of the Czech Republic, who looks like, I mean, they're undefeated in the tournament. It looks like they're the team to beat. The Czechs, I mean, the U.S. doesn't have much offense, so you got to imagine the Czechs will win that game. They would face the winner of Sweden, Germany. Germany's a tough team, but you figure Sweden would win that game, so you got Czech, Sweden in one semifinal matchup, and then on Friday, the games would be Finland-Norway, of course, in the morning. Finland should win that one. And then Canada-Russia. It seems like these tournaments always come down to Canada-Russia at some point. And that game, I got to tell you something about the Russia. You know, a lot was made, you know, Alexander Ovechkin, of course, went over to Russia this week. I believe he got there on, I think he got on Thursday or Friday. He got over there in Slovakia. Played a couple of games. 2-2 tied with Finland on Monday afternoon. And for some reason, the last 4 minutes of a tied 2-2 game, Alexander Ovechkin got one shift. And then in overtime, he had a brief one right at the beginning. But Russia didn't have the puck. Russia's coach decided to switch up the lines, get a different matchup out there. Ovechkin didn't get back out there for about another 2.5 minutes. Had the best scoring chance for Russia during the overtime. And I don't believe that he got back out there after that. Thing went to a shootout. The first two shooters for Russia were Ilya Kovalchuk, who's, you know, he's been there all tournament, so I don't blame the coach for relying heavily on Kovalchuk. But then the second shooter for Russia was Alexei Morozov, who longtime Pittsburgh Penguin fans would know. And neither of those two guys scored. But on the Finland side, their first two shooters scored. The second was Miku Koivu, sealed the deal. So that puts Russia in the unenviable task of having to beat Canada in order to get into a game that would put them in a position to win a medal, which is effectively what that does. So that to look forward to this weekend, or the rest of this week, some great hockey if you're watching the IIHF, and I know Versus has some coverage, or if you're catching it on the dish or however you're catching it. It's some pretty good hockey, and I think the only thing to really talk about, the word going on around here today about Sweden was that they were tanking today's game so they could avoid a potential matchup with Russia. Sweden did not dress their best goaltender. They went with Erik Ersberg instead, but they played a pretty good game. Marcus Kruger got a lot of ice time in that game. For Blackhawks fans, would want to know, Marcus Kruger out on the first power play unit a lot. Looked pretty good. Picked up an assist. It was a secondary assist. He kind of just threw the puck down into the slot. Puck got worked down to a player, and off the top of my head, I don't have the score sheet in front of me. I do. Who was it? Oh, that's right. He put it down to Silversberg, and then Tenenby, who is a Devils prospect, player on the Devils, was behind the goal line and banked it off the Canada goaltender, Jonathan Bernier of the LA Kings. So that's where Kruger got his assist today. Going back to Mathis Olin, who we talked about last week with Mike Peck. News came over last weekend. Mathis Olin, it appears as though, is going to forego pursuing a North American ice hockey career. He signed with Frölunda of the Swedish Elite League, which is the team that he was with before he came to the United States and signed a contract with the Blackhawks. So it appears as though I don't know why he would sign a 2-year contract with a European team if he had intentions of coming back to the United States, but he did, and he's had a very good tournament. He's tied for the league lead, or the tournament lead, with John Tavares. John Tavares in 6 games has 9 points, 5 goals. Mathis Olin has 9 points, 8 assists, 1 goal, but only a +1, but definitely a guy that's helping to lead Norway right now. So Mathis Olin having a good tournament. Kind of an unexpected, I would assume, a bit unexpected to see Norway in the playoff round. But Mathis Olin having a good tournament there. Ex-Blackhawk Tuomo Ruutu has got 5 goals in this tournament. Marty Havlat, 2 goals and four assists, +3. That's pretty much it for the Blackhawks as far as or Blackhawks-related players up in the tournament. So Cristobal Huet played very well for France, had another good game against the United States on Saturday after being pulled in the first period of a game that he saw 20 shots against Sweden on Friday. But Cristobal Huet finishes the tournament with about a 91% save percentage and a goals against a 3.41, but that's mostly due to that first period barrage he faced against Sweden. And you got to understand, too, that he's also backstopping France. So, decent tournament for Cristobal Huet. Got a lot of audio that we're going to play here tonight. Of course, that audio that you got at the beginning, the highlights of Game 7, Vancouver, those are the team 14-10 out of Vancouver. I had those up last week. I didn't get a chance to play them. I didn't have a chance to write about the John Scott. Stan Bowman had some comments about John Scott that I think have percolated and filtered around. So I think everybody knows those, but we're going to play those in a little bit. And also DeCorey Crawford negotiation news that I wrote about on thirdmanin.com the other day. We're going to get into those as well. Let's go ahead and start with John Scott. John Scott, Stan Bowman was on the Mac. Well, it's not Mac Hircone Harry anymore. You can tell that I don't listen to Chicago sports radio. Waste of time. But the Danny Mac show on the Score, 670thescore.com. Stan Bowman, post Blackhawks elimination, was on with those guys and talking about John Scott. I believe this is it. Stan Bowman talking about John Scott, saying that John Scott needs more minutes. Stan Bowman, here you go.
Obviously, the other component is John Scott. I think, you know, he came in this year and wasn't utilized an awful lot, but we talked about it briefly with the coaches after the season that, you know, we want to try to find a way to get him more ice time. He's certainly an intimidating force, and I think he did progress as the year went on. We played him in the playoffs, and he was actually pretty effective in the minutes he got. I'd like to get him some more minutes.
Stan Bowman with the Danny Mac Show, score670.com, or thescore670.com. Interesting comments from, you know, a lot of us, and when I say a lot of us, people that kind of this network of people and people who email me and other writers around the internet have spent a lot of time this season trying to figure out why John Scott was a Chicago Blackhawk and the handling of John Scott, where he was in the lineup, where he wasn't in the lineup, when he was in the lineup, how many minutes did he get, and trying just to figure out why was John Scott a Blackhawk? Who was behind the move? Who was in his corner? And who was pushing for this, as best as I can tell, a very good guy, you know, John Scott, a nice guy, a good guy to have around the room, an intelligent guy, but a guy who just really can't play hockey very well. Who's pushing to have this guy on the team? And I think a lot of us, or a few of us, spent a lot of time this year kind of figuring that it was Joel Quenneville. John Scott, of course, signed as a defenseman from the Minnesota Wild. Wasn't getting much minutes there early on in the season. And a part of the reason why Nick Leddy was called up was because that when Jason Cullimore and Nick Boynton started to – Nick Boynton specifically – started to falter in his role on the blue line, John Scott wasn't good enough to be able to step in and take minutes from Nick Boynton. Think about that for a second. So, you know, essentially what happened is Nick Leddy got recalled after the World Junior Championships because, you know, the Blackhawks felt like Jason Cullimore wasn't the answer and, you know, they had to go and get Nick Leddy. Fine. But, you know, I mean, I'll say this. Last year, down the stretch, and I actually brought this up, and other people brought it up as well, the idea of having a guy like John Scott on the roster, specifically to play in games down the stretch against teams like the St. Louis Blues, you know, your Colorado Avalanche, who throws a guy like David Krejci on the ice, the Anaheim Ducks. You know, any team that has guys that run around and try to stir the pot, down the stretch of the 2010 Blackhawks, 2009-10 Blackhawks, I was one of the people that, you know, asked, well, do the Blackhawks need an enforcer specifically for games like that? Not to be in the lineup every night, not to play 10 minutes a night, you know, or even, you know, even 8 minutes a night. Just a guy to have in the lineup. And there was a very negative reaction to that overall when I posed the question on the website in a poll. But the idea behind it was just for those specific games, not to play in playoff games, and certainly not to be counted on in any sort of a role that meant anything. John Scott signed as a defenseman and moves up in mid to late December. They basically put an end to the John Scott on defense deal and make him a forward. In fact, John Scott, on the Chicago Blackhawks own website, the Chicago Blackhawks insider, it's Adam Kempinar who does the they didn't do it a lot this year, but it used to be a weekly or a biweekly podcast that they post on ChicagoBlackhawks.com, had John Scott on the air or on his podcast. And John Scott, I'll just let you listen to it. This is ChicagoBlackhawks.com, Blackhawks Insider, Adam Kempinar with John Scott in December, talking about what his role was on the team and how he was best effective.
I want to ask you about playing wing. I mean, obviously, you came to the Blackhawks as a defenseman. You've been used as a defenseman, but also been thrown into a role, especially with injuries, as a winger. Has that been much of an adjustment for you? Have you always kind of played both positions?
I've never played both. I started last year in Minnesota a little bit, but I only played 5-6 games at forward. The rest I played at D. But, it's something just comes with the territory. Obviously, I'm not that fleet of foot on defense. I'm a little more, I think, valuable at forward. I don't get as much ice time and stuff, but I just fourth line guy, just go out and do energy, and I just kind of embrace it. I'm out there to give the fans a little bit of energy and give the team a boost, and just do what I got to do.
So in December, John Scott was saying that he's more valuable to the team at forward, and then of course down the stretch late in the season, we were Blackhawks fans, and all of us in general were, you know, kind of fed a bill of goods that, no, John Scott, we like him on defense. We think he's good in that role. And then a lot of people that watch John Scott started to try to make themselves believe that he's good in that role. But John Scott himself admits that, you know, he's more valuable to the Blackhawks at forward, a position that he can't play more than 5 minutes a night at. But at the end of April, 5 months later, Stan Bowman is saying that next year, he wants to get John Scott more minutes. Now, the revelation here is that Stan Bowman went to the coaching staff and talked to the coaching staff about getting John Scott more minutes. So if we're to decipher what was said there, it's Stan Bowman and his staff, hockey operations, that want to see more of John Scott, not the coaching staff. Which is interesting, because if Joe Quenneville doesn't want to play John Scott, he should just not play John Scott. But he's getting pressure from the people above to play John Scott. So, you know, when you add that playoff game where John Scott plays less than a minute, 59 seconds, who, this interview that Stan Bowman gives, who was behind that? That was Stan Bowman. I don't know. I don't see the reason. If you want to have John Scott on the team, that's one thing. But to get him more minutes and, you know, a guy who realizes that he doesn't have much value to the team and played 5-6 games at forward before this year. I mean, the signing of John Scott will always be a puzzle to me and most everyone, because you signed a guy to play defense who couldn't play defense. Not even halfway through the season, you gave up on that and then tried to put him in a position that he, in that audio clip, told you he'd only played 5 or 6 games ever. I don't know. So you got that to look forward to next year. More John Scott, because that's what Stan Bowman wants. The Corey Crawford negotiations. Eric Franson of the Calgary Sun. Talked to Corey Crawford's agent, and I wish I could pull it up here real quick. I do have it. Eric Franson of the Calgary Sun talked to Corey Crawford's agent, and basically the news is that according to Crawford's agent, Gilles Lupin, or I don't even know how to pronounce it, basically said that the Blackhawks and he have talked, and they're planning to hold negotiations face-to-face at the NHL draft, which is, you know, basically 2 months away in St. Paul, where Minnesota Wild play. That's where the draft is this year at the end of June. Significance of that, of course, is that is 5-6 days away from free agency. And as I wrote in the story that I put up on the website, thethirdmanin.com, you know, we've seen what's happened now to the Philadelphia Flyers. The Philadelphia Flyers, I don't know how they can go to their fan base next year and say, no, Sergei Bobrovsky's our guy. You know, maybe you could have gotten away with that 2 or 3 years ago, but how did that work for the Washington Capitals and Sergei Varlamov? Didn't work very well. And it looks like Michael Neuwirth is their guy moving forward in Washington, but in Philadelphia, you've got Bobrovsky and you've got, you know, two journeyman backups at best in Boucher and Michael Layton. They need to make an upgrade there. The Philadelphia Flyers are so close that, you know, and Chris Pronger is getting, you know, will be another year older. So you can't go back to your fan base and say, no, we're going to pin everything on Sergei Bobrovsky this year. They just can't do it. So what's going to happen on July 1st? The Philadelphia Flyers are going to sign the best goaltender available, or at least the best goaltender available that they can work out a deal with and fit it under their cap. Now, whether that's Thomas Vokoun at a shorter deal, or whether that's Brizgalov at a longer deal, that they can sneak that salary cap number in effectively for them, who knows? But it certainly would appear that one of those two goaltenders is going to Philadelphia. What does that mean to the Blackhawks? That means that you've got the Phoenix Coyotes, if it's Brizgalov, that now have a goaltending vacancy. And, you know, the Coyotes have goaltenders in the system, but, you know, again, whether they're in Phoenix or whether they're in Winnipeg next year, they need a number one goaltender. But the Blackhawks are going to put off negotiations until the draft. So close to when all of this stuff is going to go down. Now, I think one of the things about restricted free agents that people probably don't know, or, you know, think the majority of people don't know, is that restricted free agents, it's a bit different than UFAs. Now, UFAs, if you believe in this sort of thing, can't talk to anybody until noon on July 1st, noon Eastern on July 1st. That's when they can start talking to teams, their agents, okay? It's different for a restricted free agent. Restricted free agents can start talking to any team. Corey Crawford can start talking to any team that he wants to on June 28th. So the Blackhawks are going to go to the draft on June 24th and 25th and present three, according to this note in Eric Francis' column in the Calgary Sun, they're going to go to the draft and they're going to present Corey Crawford with three different offers on June 24th, 25th. 3 days later, Corey Crawford can talk to any team that he wants and find out if there is indeed an offer sheet on the table. Is there an offer sheet out there for Corey Crawford? All he has to do is wait 3 days, 3-4 days after he gets those offers from Stan Bowman to find out if those things are out there. I don't know what the Blackhawks are waiting for. If you have a deal that you think is fair, and if Corey Crawford wants to be here, I'm about to play, Stan Bowman's going to say, in another audio clip from The Score, then make the offer. You know, find out now what you're dealing with from this agent and from Crawford's side. If they really want to be here, if Corey Crawford likes Chicago that much and he wants to be here, what's your fair offer and make it right now? Nothing's preventing you from doing it, first of all. Just do it. You know, I know a lot of people are pointing to the Jimmy Howard contract, but, you know, if that, you know, to me, if that was the deal, if that's the fair deal, then you just offer that and he takes it right now. I think Corey Crawford's going to get, I think he believes that he's going to get much more than two and a quarter a year. Now, whether that's 2.75, whether he's looking at three, you know, and I think for those of you that and we all do it, play around on CapGeek with their calculator and try to figure out how the Blackhawks are going to make it all work. I think with Corey Crawford, just to be on the safe side, when you're trying to figure out what the Blackhawks are going to look like next year, just pin it at three, because if it comes anything below three, then just take what, you know, the difference as your flex on the cap for next year. You know, that little bit of space that you'll have to, you know, for a call up here and there. Just pin it at three and move along. Don't think about it anymore, because I think the fact that this is being drug out, or it appears as though it will be, just says to me that the Crawford side believe that they're going to benefit. You know, if they are indeed the ones that are trying to hold this off. But if I'm on the Blackhawks and I'm saying, no, I have a fair offer, I want you, here it is, yes or no. You know, the news that came in Eric Francis' column is that the Blackhawks aren't even going to offer anything until the draft. I don't understand. Stan Bowman, again, on the Danny Mac Show on April 29th, thescore670.com, talking about the Corey Crawford negotiations. I believe this is it here.
We've been looking for, we want some stability and to be able to not have a new goaltender every year, and we're excited that we have Corey now. Well, I've had discussions with his agent, recently, going back the last few weeks or months, and Corey wants to be here. He's made it very, very clear that he enjoys Chicago. He likes our team. He likes his role here. You know, we certainly want him as well. So we're in a different spot than we were a year ago in terms of, the makeup of our team. And this is a priority for us. We're going to set out to get him signed. And it's one of those things that I'm very confident we'll eventually get it worked out.
He's confident they're eventually going to get worked out. But it's a priority. I don't know what that means. It's a priority, but they're not gonna present offers until the end of June. 3 or 4 days before Corey Crawford could talk to any team that he wants to. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Here's the clip on whether or not, oh boy, Blackhawks fans are really going to not like this one. Here's the clip on whether or not the question was asked by Matt Spiegel in that same interview. Is Stan Bowman worried about offer sheets this summer? Now, if you recall, Stan Bowman said he came out publicly and said that he wasn't worried about offer sheets last summer, and Doug Wilson really bit him in the behind on that one. The question was asked just last week, or about a week and a half ago, to Stan Bowman, and this is what he had to say.
That signing him is a priority. Are you worried that a team is going to swoop in and sign him to a large offer sheet like what happened with Nick Jalmerson last year?
No, we're in a different spot, Dan, than we were a year ago in terms of our salary cap and our number of players we have to work with leading into next year. You know, it was a difficult situation. We're not going to face that this year. We certainly have a few changes to make, but we're going to approach Corey right now as opposed to having to, you know, last year, remember, we had to unload a bunch of players. We had to make some trades, and we had to try to get all that done to get, you know, in compliance with the cap. So we weren't able to address our goaltending until July, late July. And, you know, we're sitting here now in early May, and that's, you know, going to be our top priority. So, you know, we've been very clear and open about the fact that Corey's our goaltender. He's deserved the right to be our number one. You know, we gave him the opportunity, you know, at some point during this year, and he seized it.
So, no. I got to go back to something that he said there. First of all, clean up some of the mess that Stan Bowman just left there in that comment. First of all, talking about Niemi, they weren't able to get Niemi done until, you know, that's revisionist history. No, the Niemi thing didn't work itself out until the end of July, the beginning of August. But that's because Niemi went the arbitration route because the Blackhawks, you know, were in a different situation. That part of it's true. They were in a different situation. They could only offer so much. So as the process worked itself out, it did go to arbitration. But, you know, the situation this year as far as the Blackhawks and the cap isn't all that much different. I think people have this false sense of security this year about the Blackhawks cap and where they sit and how much flexibility they have. First of all, most of the, you know, we have a question here about the cap, but I'll just, I guess we'll just address it now. First of all, the new, you know, each year the cap is set based on hockey-related revenues from the season that is just completed. So the new television deal with NBC and Versus does not have an effect on next year's cap whatsoever. The only thing there that would come into play is whether or not the players want to once again enact their 5% or just a little bit below 5% escalator, which I don't see a reason why they wouldn't do it this time around, because the expectation is next year that revenues will increase, you know, quite a bit, you know, based on, you know, the thought that hockey-related revenues as they are without the new TV deals will remain, you know, basically the same, plus you're throwing in that money from Versus and NBC. So there'll be more money next year, so the player escrow would come down in theory. So I think that it's pretty apparent that the 5% escalator will go in. But the estimations are that that's the only reason why the cap is going to move up. So the cap is essentially going to stay the same until the players enact the 5% escalator. So if they do, you're talking about a 62.25 cap. That's basically what it is. 62.3 as opposed to 59.4. You know, and then of course with the summer rule and the, you know, you can only go over a certain amount. The Blackhawks still have Cristobal Huey there. So yeah, the cap penalty comes off, so the Blackhawks, you know, have that $4 million to work with again, because that cap penalty now moves away. But Brent Seabrook went from 3.5 to 5.8, and whatever Corey Crawford's raise is going to be will at the very least take up the rest of that cap penalty. Plus, you need new deals for if you keep Brouwer, if you keep Michael Frolik, which you'll definitely keep one of those guys. Whoever you bring in to replace Pisani, Johnson, and Marty Turco, Thomas Kopechki, those guys need new deals. So the Blackhawks are kind of right up against it. You know, basically what they need to do is they need that cap to go up to 62.2, 62.3. Really, they need it to go up more than that, which based on you know, unconfirmed reports, you know, the cap won't be set until June 30th, so we won't know one way or another. But based on initial reports, it's not going to go up on its own. It needs the 5%, you know, escalator. You know, the Blackhawks basically can bring back everybody that they had for the same amount, maybe a little bit less. So you're talking about, you're probably talking about having to carry a kid that maybe, again, a kid that you don't want to carry, or bringing in more guys at $500,000. They really don't have much room to grow because of the Seabrook raise and whatever Crawford ends up getting. So, again, it's like, why are you playing games with Corey Crawford when, you know, if you have a deal that you believe is fair and if he really does want to be here, get the thing done now before, you know, the game changes. Philadelphia starts throwing money. All these people start throwing money. I mean, you can't look at this situation and think that goaltenders don't have value anymore. Antti Niemi got big bucks from San Jose. Craig Anderson got big bucks from the Ottawa Senators. Who's to say that Corey Crawford's not going to get big bucks? Don't drag your feet on this because it could end up handcuffing you on the salary cap even more. You don't have, you know, again, false sense of security. The Blackhawks don't have that much room to play with unless this thing goes up to 64, 65 million, which it just doesn't look like it's going up to. The cap is already, you know, in 6 years, the cap went up $20 million. I mean, I don't know how much more it can go up. And in recent years, the only reason why it went up, you know, was because of the 5% escalator. And the Blackhawks have already boomed. Boston's already back in the picture. And, you know, so where, you know, where is that other money coming from? I don't know. Certainly it'll be in the game next year, but the game changes next year, you know, a year from now when you need a new CBA. So I don't know what they're doing. It doesn't make any sense to me, but that's the deal. Other dates of note. Not that this really is going to play into what the Blackhawks do, but buyouts can begin. People always ask about contract buyouts. Buyouts can begin on June 15th. So from June 15th to June 30th, if the Blackhawks wanted to buy somebody out, which I don't think that would ever happen, but if they wanted to buy somebody out, it has to happen in that window, unless the Blackhawks have a player that takes them to arbitration. Then they get a bit of an extension. But you know, which basically, you know, if a player takes them to arbitration, they have up to 48 hours after the arbitration ruling to buy out any player that they would want to buy out. But, again, that doesn't really figure into what the Blackhawks are going to do. So that's that. All right. Sam Bowman, let's see here. He also went, I guess we'll only got a couple more things here. Stan Bowman, on the Score, talks about Kyle Beach, and then we'll go right into the question that you guys left for me, and we'll kick those off, and we'll get out of here. But this is Stan Bowman on Kyle Beach and what's going on there.
Kyle Beach certainly plays that style of game. He's an agitator. He's a big kid. He had a pretty good first season, and he didn't score as much as he had in the past, and I think he was adjusting a little bit to the, you know, pro game, but he's got that element to his game, and I think, you know, we're going to hope he has a big summer and comes in ready to play and earn a job in training camp. You know, we're not going to hand jobs out, but he's a guy that is able to fill that role with his style, so if he can come in and do it, that would be a bonus for us. And, you know, we're also going to look through trades or free agents at players that we think would add that element to our team.
Yes, I know what he said. All right, here's the question. This is from, I don't know, I apologize. Hey, guys, love the show. Can you see Kyle Beach making the Hawks out of camp next year? Heard an interview recently where Stan Bowman said Beach will be given, I believe this is the interview, would be given every opportunity to make the team next year. If you'd have to rate his chances, how would you? Will he make it at all in 2011-12 ever? I hear you and read you and others saying he has made adjustments and needs more time. What type of player do you think they want him to be? Who would you best compare Beach to? Well, first question first. It's going to be very hard for Kyle, you know, kind of piggybacking off the discussion that I just had about the Hawks cap. It's going to be very hard for Kyle Beach financially to fit under the cap next year. Again, barring a major move where the Blackhawks shed a bunch of salary, which, you know, I don't know. We have an email here from someone who will kind of touch on that in a minute, but I don't see it happening. Stan Bowman claims that nobody in the core is going anywhere. So I don't know where that money's really going to move. I mean, Nicholas Jalmerson's a guy that's been thrown out there. You know, you could see, you know, maybe potentially Troy Brower, a sign and trade, or maybe even a trade just outright. You know, but I mean, that doesn't really move a lot of salary. Jalmerson moves a little bit, but again, you got to replace Jalmerson. So, I mean, do you get rid of 3.5 in Jalmerson's contract and then bring somebody in for 2.5 that gives you a little bit of space? But does that really get the job done? I don't know. Kyle Beach's cap number is about $1.2 million. It's going to be hard to fit him in under that cap. It may be hard to ever fit Kyle Beach in on the Blackhawks cap. Do I see him making it all in 2011-12? If he's a Blackhawk and he's in the organization next year, I do believe at some point, if they have injuries, you know, something, they should be able to fit him in somehow. Hold on just a second. Why don't you listen to this? And this is Stan Bowman on Nicoletti.
Once he came up here second half of the season, his game just took off. I think his confidence went up. He's still so young, we forget that at this age, you know, two of our best players, and Keith and Seabrook as defensemen, they weren't even in the NHL yet, you know, and they certainly weren't at the level that Nick is at right now, right when they did start. So, you know, he's got a good head start on him here, and I think he's the kind of kid that wants to continually get better. He's got areas to improve, but to go through that experience this year and to be able to play in those pressure situations, and we're very pleased. I think he's got a bright future. He's going to be an excellent defenseman for a number of years.
All right, sorry about that. I had a persistent rap knocking at my back door. Okay, Kyle Beach. How would I rate his chances? The thing with Kyle, and I talked about it, I believe, a little bit last week with Al, and I know I've talked about it in the past. The thing with Kyle, you know, it's, you know, one of the reasons why I don't think that Thomas Kopechky is going to return to the Blackhawks next year isn't because he doesn't provide a little bit of what the Blackhawks, you know, need, which is a little bit of grit on the wing, a guy who's not afraid to go to the front of the net and create traffic there. He goes into the corners. He works hard. And that's not the problem with Thomas Kopechky. The problem with Kopechky is he takes dumb penalties, especially in the offensive zone. Well, what's the issue with Kyle Beach? Kyle Beach takes penalties all over the ice, and he takes a lot of undisciplined penalties. He's easily distracted on the ice. He needs to work on that. Secondly, and first and foremost, before you even get to that, you've got to work on his skating. One of the reasons why Kyle Beach didn't score a lot of goals this year is he's not able to, get to the puck first. You know, he lost a lot of foot races to pucks. And, if he works on that skating, he can drift in, you know, into the areas where he needs to score more often. He also needs to get to the net more. He did that a lot towards the end of the season, but that's an issue too. And after all that, it seems to be a strength and conditioning issue as well that they, you know, Stan Bowman talked about in the clip that we played. You know, he needs to have a strong offseason. What he means when he says that is both he needs to work on his skating, but they also want him to come into camp in tremendous condition. One of the reasons why Ben Smith is so beloved as a prospect within the organization is because he's a workout fiend. So that has him one step above everybody else right there. You know, right or wrong, that's the first step in the evaluation process of these guys. You know, one of the reasons why Ben Smith stuck around so long in September in the 2010 training camp is just because when he showed up in camp, he was in the best shape. So immediately they look at you and like, this guy's he's working hard, he's training, he wants to be here, he wants to succeed, and they give you a longer look when you show up and not, you know, not looking like, you know, a great athlete. You know, which for years, hockey players have been able to get away with. One of the best Blackhawks of all time, Steve Larmer, was not a guy who was ever in any sort of mentionable condition. He was just a great hockey player. You know, I think, a guy like Jeff Tate, not that Jeff Tate was ever out of shape. He wasn't at all. But he's not a workout guy. You know, he's just a good athlete that plays well. You know, he's a good hockey player. But he's not a guy who's living in a weight room. Ben Smith's a guy that lives in a weight room. And I think that's one of the things that reflects poorly upon Kyle Beach is when you had guys in Rockford like Ben Smith, like Kyle Hagel, who's moved on now to the St. Louis Blues, and then you've got Kyle Beach standing there. It's like, well, if those guys are working as hard as they are, how come Kyle isn't? Kyle doesn't want it as bad as those guys do, that reflects badly on him. That's what he needs to do this summer. He needs to show them that he wants it as bad as a guy like Ben Smith does. And if he doesn't, I think that they will sour on him, and I don't think he'll be around much longer. He could go on a trade this summer, you know, if the right trade comes along. But I don't know. I think he's there's a lot of untapped potential there. And like Mike Peck said, you know, it took Jack Skilly a while to get up, and you hope that Kyle Beach is, you know, turns into a better pro player than Jack Skilly, but it takes these guys time. And there's a lot of talent there with Beach, and if he can, you know, focus and get himself right, you know, on the right path, he could be a hell of a player. You know, there's just a lot of question marks there. As far as, you know, what do they want him to be? They want him to be a power forward, obviously. They want him to be you know, it seems like every time that you hear Stan Bowman talk about Kyle Beach, they like the fact that he's an agitator. Well, I don't know that I'd be telling Kyle Beach that. You know, if I really liked that about Kyle Beach's game and I really thought that helped me, that's fine, but I wouldn't be telling Kyle Beach that because that's a part of the problem in Rockford, the fact that he thinks that that's what he has to be. So when he's being that, well, he's on the road to being Daniel Carcillo. And the Blackhawks wanted to be more than Daniel Carcillo. So that, you know, I don't know that they're really handling him the way that they should be. But it's really all up to Kyle Beach. So that's that. We'll go through the rest of these here. Chris, what are the chances of the Blackhawks bringing back Andrew Ladd? Atlanta was quick to re-sign Bufflin, but not Ladd. There have been rumors that Ladd is apprehensive to re-signing with Atlanta, and who could blame him? On one hand, you'd think you'd have you'd have to think that the Thrashers wouldn't have put the captaincy. This is also poorly written, I'm sorry to say. Wouldn't have put the captaincy on him if they didn't fully expect him back. But on the other hand, it could have been nothing more than a negotiating ploy. What do you think? 29 goals and Ladd's grit are the exact ingredient that the Hawks lacked this season. Could a Brouwer-Jalmerson package, maybe with a pick thrown in, do the trick, or is that too much? That's the question. You know, 29 goals, I think, is, you know, if you're expecting Andrew Ladd to come back and play and give you 29 goals, I think you have to go back and look at what Andrew Ladd gave you as a Blackhawk and not really pay too much attention. You know, as an Atlanta Thrasher, you know, he led among forwards, he led the Thrashers in ice time all season long. Is Andrew Ladd going to play on Jonathan Toews' line? You know, and if you're bringing him in to play on Toews' line, that's one thing. But if you're bringing him back to play on Dave Bolin's line, well, you're not going to get 29 goals from Andrew Ladd. So I think you have to decide what it, you know, what you think Andrew Ladd is. And I also think you have to go back to what, you know, people talk about players in their contract year. Ladd was in a contract year. Go back to the player that Ladd was. I was absolutely enamored. I just absolutely loved Andrew Ladd's game all year this year for Atlanta. But the fact is that the player that he was for the Thrashers this year, he wasn't that player with the Blackhawks. Has he matured? Has he grown into a whole different player? Possibly. But I think that you have to beware about going back after him and then bringing him back and putting him into the lineup. I think, you know, I was just looking at preparing for the show. I was looking at Ladd's in the Thrashers' stats, and it amazed me that he only had two game-winning goals all year long, because every time I watched Atlanta, it seemed like Ladd was scoring a big goal. Puck was finding him in, you know, important times in games. He scored a lot of big goals for them. You know, whether it was to get the team within one, to tie a game, to take the lead, to put the hammer down at the end of a third period, Ladd always seemed to be in the right spot at the right time. You know, I don't know. To trade Hjalmarsson for Ladd, I don't know. If you could guarantee me that Ladd's going to be that player coming back, but, you know, he's not a banger. First of all, he's really not that huge of a guy. And, you know, he's not, you know, Brower's more physical of a player than Andrew Ladd is. Ladd's a smart guy. And, you know, he knows where to be on the ice. He gets the places. And I'd just be concerned that Ladd just had a career year. I know he's still young, but I don't know. But I don't think that Ladd's going anywhere. I you know, like this this emailer asked, you know, if you're going to put the captaincy on him, you got to believe that he's not going anywhere. Even if Ladd, and it might be where this thing is going with the Thrashers, even if Ladd's taking the team to arbitration, you know, thinking that he, you know, 29 goals, if he can't get the long-term deal that he wants, why not just take the team to arbitration and try again next year? Maybe that's where this thing's going. But I don't think that Ladd's going anywhere. I don't know how you know, Ladd led him in goals, led the Thrashers in goals scored and points. I don't know how you let him go or trade him for, you know, a second or third pair defenseman, you know, and Brower, who may or may not, you know, have a coming out season next year. This is Don. Hey, Chris, listening to your chat with Al on Monday's TTMI show, and couldn't disagree with you more, with you two more on Troy Brower. He's a slow grinder that everyone keeps expecting to score 30 goals. I think the comparison, and this was Al's comparison, to Rene Bork is weak, simply because Bork is a way better skater and had a wicked shot. Bork is a two-way player and was a top penalty killer in Chicago before he was traded. Brower isn't a regular penalty killer and is basically there when he is out of necessity. Brower is missing something upstairs. He folds in the clutch, and it's time to cut the cord, Don. You know, I didn't totally agree with Al's comparison to Rene Bork. You know, but I don't think the Blackhawks should, you know, give up on Troy Brower just yet. And I was having this discussion with somebody, I believe, on the website. You know, if you're going to ask Troy Brower to be your physical presence, you know, which, you know, you'd like to have a physical presence on every line, or at least three or your four lines. You really would, but if you're so lean on that, you know, in that category, that when one player gets on the ice, he's so focused on that because he's one of, if not the only guy that can bring that physical intensity on a nightly basis, on a shift-to-shift basis, Well, then you can't in turn ask Troy Brouwer to score 25, 30 goals. You know, when you look around the league at guys, you know, go to NHL.com and, you know, and look at the hit counts. And then look at those players who've led the league in hits. Look at those players' offensive production. Like the two guys that you know, Ryan Callahan, who had a career year, didn't play, I think he played 60 games, 24 goals. That's a guy who hits as much, more than Troy Brouwer did this season, and had great offensive season. The only other guy that is in that tier, you know, those league leaders in hits, that scored more than 20 goals is Dustin Brown, the LA Kings. Troy Brouwer is no Dustin Brown. You know, but, you know, the other guys that are right there with, you know, that you compare the hit counts to Brouwer are Tuomo Ruutu, who I believe had 19 goals. Cal Clutterbuck, the same. So as far as what Brouwer was asked to do this year, you know, bring that physical intensity, you know, have that kind of hit count, you know, be relied on to bring that kind of thunder every night. He's right at about where he should be as far as goals scored when you span the league. I don't think that you can give up on Troy Brouwer just because you want to bring in somebody else that that maybe doesn't have as good of a hands that Brouwer, you know, like the emailer said, yes. 2 years in a row now, he's sort of disappeared towards the end of the season. I don't know that you could say clutch. Last year down the stretch, it wasn't the clutch. This year, definitely. He disappeared when the Blackhawks needed him. That's definitely a problem. But if you lose Troy Brouwer, okay, on the physical side, in the physical sense, especially if you're not bringing back Thomas Kopechky, if you lose Troy Brouwer, not only do you have to replace Troy Brouwer's, you know, physical status, okay, but now you also have to bring in somebody who's going to provide you 17, 20, 25 goals. Plus, you also have to add on to the physical side of your team with a player aside from Brouwer, because that's the issue with Brouwer. If he's the first guy into the zone, going into the corner, throwing the check, okay, to create the play, you know, then what's the standard reason? He's not going to be in front of the net to score a goal. You know, that's the order. I mean, you go in, you take the body, a player like him, you win the puck, and then you get it back to the point, or you dish it up to the half wall, or, you know, if he's out there with Kane or whoever he's out there with, and then they advance the puck, and then it's his job to get to the front of the net. You know, so, you know, the first guy in on the forecheck isn't always going to be in front of the net. You know, the guy who's creating or winning puck possession isn't always going to be the guy that's going to score the goal. In fact, odds are he won't score the goal. So I think you've got to bring in somebody else that can take some of that slack off Brouwer. And, you know, he can get to the net more and score more. And I also think, like Al said, no player on the team has screwed more with Brouwer. And that is in part because he is so flexible. He can move up and down your lineup. He can play, you know, anywhere from the fourth to the first line. So whenever Quenneville was trying to shuffle the deck, which is whenever the Blackhawks lose, because that's how he coaches, he's got to be an active coach. When they lose, he's got to have an answer. So he changed the lineup around. So Brouwer is the most flexible in that he can move up and down. So he was the most screwed with. So it's like a catch-22. Yeah, he's versatile. And then he could play, you know, as a winger, he could play with just about anybody on any line. But that means he's going to get screwed with. I'd like to see him play on a line. If the Blackhawks aren't going to go out and get a number two center, I'd like to see Sharp be the number two center. Kane on the right wing, and I'd like to see Brouwer on that left side. And then, you know, have Taves and Hossa together and, you know, hopefully acquire somebody to play with those two. Because it doesn't look like that player's in the organization. You know, they definitely need to add, you know, a little bit of thunder to their top six. And, you know, as Stan Bowman in the interviews that he did at the end of the season talked about how much he liked that Bolin, Frolik, and Bickel line. So expect to see that thing together next year. So your third line is already set. And if Brouwer's back, there's only one spot open in the top six. And then your fourth line could be, you just don't know what your fourth line's going to look like. But I'd like to see, I think if Brouwer plays consistently on a line with Sharp and Kane, I think Brouwer can score 25 goals. He's got the hands to do it. His skating has improved. And he's shown you that he can be a physical presence. He can't be relied on to do that and score 25, 30 goals. It's not possible. Dustin Brown's a special player. And I wouldn't categorize Troy Brouwer as a special player, but he's a talented guy and an aspect on the team that you don't want to easily get rid of. Like Al said, Rene Bourque. Blackhawks, I don't blame the Blackhawks for getting rid of Rene Bourque. But in hindsight, if you want to learn from that experience, maybe they shouldn't have. More recent history, we just talked about the guy that I think more people would recall is Andrew Ladd. I think that's a better comparison if we're going to try to line Troy Brouwer up against former Blackhawks. I think Andrew Ladd is a better comparison. You look at Andrew Ladd's season in the Stanley Cup season, and put that up against Troy Brouwer. Now Brouwer was much more of a physical presence, much more than Andrew Ladd. But Andrew Ladd disappeared for weeks on end that season. A good player, and Troy Brouwer's a good player, But Ladd disappeared for weeks on end too. And look at the season that he just had. A little consistency, a lot of ice time, familiarity with his line partners. Like I said, I was Troy Brouwer going back to Norfolk. Troy Brouwer is a guy I was absolutely wrong on. I never thought he'd make it just because he couldn't skate, but he worked on that and he improved so much in that aspect that he made it and he came. But he's always had the hand, and he looks like a guy who he knows his role and he plays his role. Whatever the coach is asking him to do, that's what he does. And like I said, he can move up and down. He's just, to me, he's too valuable of a guy. If you're going to get him back for basically what he made, which you can't get him for $1 million, but maybe you get him for $1.4 million. I think you roll with Troy Brouwer for another year or two because, again, if you lose him, then you need to bring in two guys, on the more physical side. And, if Ben Smith is going to move into the Thomas Kopechky spot, then fine. But you still need to add on to the lack of physical game that you had this year. So I don't know that you can do that in this off season, in this free agency class. And, is Hjalmarsson, the question becomes, is Hjalmarsson coveted enough that he can go out and get you something, in your top six? I don't know. We'll see. Let's move along here. Chris enjoyed this week's show. You and Al are always great together. How is it that St. Louis is able to sign Kyle Hagel in late April? If he's a UFA, doesn't Hagel have to wait till July 1st to sign with an NHL team? No. First of all, Kyle Hagel wasn't under an NHL contract. It's just like if a player's playing in Sweden right now or was playing in Sweden. It's part of the reason why the IIHF World Championship is such a big deal everywhere but North America, because basically everywhere but North America, all the leagues have wrapped up. North America hockey runs all the way till the first week of June. But European hockey also starts earlier. It starts at least a month earlier than it does here. If a Swedish Elite League player wanted to sign with an NHL team right now, he could. And that's the same thing with Kyle Hagel. Kyle Hagel was on on an AHL contract. And so he was free to negotiate and sign with whoever he wants. That, though, you know, there is a moratorium on that. Really, they're basically from June 15th to June 30th. There can be no new contract signed. You know, even like, and I don't recall if I made this point or not, but on the restricted free agents, talking about Corey Crawford, restricted free agents, and any one of the Blackhawks restricted free agents can do this, but you can, as a restricted free agent, you can talk to, beginning on June 28th, any team that you want, including the Blackhawks, but you can't be offered a contract, you know, informally, you know, in writing, until July 1st. And that, you know, that moratorium on any player, any kind of player, any status, any level of free agency or whatever, up until June 15th. So there could be more signings. The Blackhawks could sign a guy tomorrow if they wanted to. It just, he can't have an NHL contract or be finishing an NHL contract. Because if he was under an NHL contract, it would be running until June 30th, so he couldn't sign anywhere. So that's the story there. Answered that one. From, this person doesn't leave a name. How can you claim Corey Crawford? This is about last week and something that I said on last week's show. So how can you claim Corey Crawford was the clear MVP ahead of Taves? And he's talking about my last week, if you missed it on the show, I talked about, you know, a lot, it's, I know it's been said and been written in other places, and I know that there was some reaction when the Hart Trophy nominees, the three nominees were named, that some people, you know, I don't know that they were really complaining that Taves wasn't a part of it, but they noted that Taves wasn't in the, you know, the final three nominees. And I basically, or I did say that, you know, how could Taves be a Hart Trophy candidate when he's not even the MVP of his team? Corey Crawford is. Well, this person, unsigned, says, how can you claim Corey Crawford was a clear MVP ahead of Taves? Crawford can be replaced. There are at least 20 goalies in the NHL right now, at least as good as Corey Crawford. How many Jonathan Taves are running around the league? Once again, you continue to prove what a total idiot you are. Fuck off. Unsigned. Well, you know, how many Jonathan Taves are running around the league? Well, not many. But we're talking about most valuable player to your team this season. You know, that's, you know, if you were able to go and pluck any player off any team that you wanted to, yeah, it you know, you'd be able to get a better goaltender or just as good of a goaltender as Corey Crawford around the league. And, yeah, there are not that many guys that you'd rather have than Jonathan Taves. Point taken. But that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the scenario. We were talking about MVP this year, and when you talk about a player that the Blackhawks could not do without this year, no, they couldn't do without Taves either. But even with Taves, you know, without Crawford, you know, I don't even know. The guy played 27, 28 games in a row down the stretch. And, you know, he held your team together. You know, I mean, you could say that Taves is just as, you know, it's my opinion that Corey Crawford's the MVP of the team. And I think a lot of people would share that. Some people would say Taves, you know, to each to your own. But I think you're confusing the point, unsigned. Next one. Hey, Chris, I'll grant you the first week of the Michael Foligno experience had me shaking my head too, but he really came around in the playoffs and looks like a heck of an acquisition by Stan Bowman. Now, the Frolik, Bolin, Bickel line is no Bowley, Ladd, and Seager, mind you, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what they can do with a fresh start and a healthy Bolin next year. This got me to thinking. Dale Talon and his ability to rate talent, how do you see it? It is clear Frolik is a hell of a player, or hell of a lot better player, than Jack Skilly, and the Hawks wound up with a top goalie prospect who could wind up being the backup to Crawford next season. All Talon got in return was Skilly, the great Hugh Jessamyn, and a low-rated prospect. If Salak never makes the NHL, Bowman still gets the better end of the deal. Can you tell me what Talon was thinking? You know, I totally agree with you on Frolik coming around in the playoffs and being, you know, a heck of a piece of the puzzle in the Blackhawks' comeback in that series. I remember Game 6. I remember sitting there in the United Center and you know, turning to the person sitting next to me and saying, you know, I never thought I'd be sitting here ever saying that Michael Frolik has taken over this playoff game. I never thought I'd be able to say that. Or I'd have to say that, but I did. Game 6, Michael Frolik took that game over. It was awesome in that game. But I also don't think that you can completely discount, you know, what he showed in 2 months before that. You know, I think that did he earn a chance to come back and, you know, play for this team next year? Yeah, probably, but... You know, I don't think anybody, and we said as much when he was acquired, if he can fit into that third-line right-wing role, and he's more agreeable to the idea of playing a little center when need be, then I think he's a valuable piece. You know, because, yeah, he could play left-wing. I mean, right-wing, left-wing, guys have preferences, and it does make a difference. Don't ever let anybody tell you it doesn't make a difference. It does make a difference. Some guys just can't play one side. They prefer the, you know, one side or the other. You know, I don't know which side Michael Frolik prefers, but he can play either side. If he's, like I said, if he's willing to play more center next year, he's a valuable guy because he's got a little skill, and he works hard. You know, Stan Bowman, I remember, you know, hearing and reading that Stan Bowman was, you know, kind of talking about he wasn't a small guy. I mean, Frolik definitely tries, and that's half the battle. You know, since a lot of people always try to compare the Blackhawks to the Detroit Red Wings, the guy that you'd want Frolik to be like, you know, one of the you know, the unsung heroes on the Detroit Red Wings for 3+ years now has been Dan Cleary. Dan Cleary is a guy who's very responsible on both ends, provides a little offense here, you know, every now and then. But he's also a guy that grinds it out along the boards. He gets into the corner. He wins battles that you wouldn't expect, you know, a guy like Dan Cleary to win. And then he gets to the front of the net. He fronts the goaltender. And, you know, he causes a disturbance. But a smart guy who's got a stick on the ice, works hard on both ends. You know, Frolik that much. But, you know, you'd like to see him bulk up a little bit in the legs, be able to stand up a little bit more to the physical game. And if he can do that, then the next obstacle is his shot selection. And it's just mystifying shot selection at times. And that, you know, I mean, his biggest goal of the playoffs was a penalty shot goal. And how many of those are you going to get? You know, shot selection is a major issue with him, and it's been a major issue since he came into the league. I don't think it's any, you know, talking more about, you know, Florida, I definitely have some serious, you know, watching the World Championships, watching the Anaheim Ducks all year, going into last year's draft, I thought Cam Fowler was going to Florida. And they chose Eric Goodbranson, and Eric Goodbranson, for Dale Talon's sake, better be the next Chris Pronger. You know, I know why Dale drafted him. You know, they want Florida to be a tough team to play against, and, you know, if I was Dale, I'd want to be ahead of the curve, too. You know, by the time Florida's ready to contend and, you know, for Dale's sake, hopefully be, a cup contender, the game probably will be different. I mean, the way teams win championships, it's all cyclical. It'll probably be different than it is now. It won't, you know, the game could change. But, Fowler's the goods. I mean, Fowler's, you know, he can play all over the ice. He moves the puck well. He's slick. He's very composed. And he's one of the United States' best players in the world, the World Championships right now. But as a pure skilly Frolik deal, Frolik, when he was traded, had worked his way from, at the beginning of the season, their first-line right wing all the way down to their fourth-line right wing, a guy that was having trouble staying in the lineup. On the Florida Panthers, okay? So that's one thing. Plus, something I just mentioned. Dale was trying to make the Florida Panthers tougher to play against. Whatever you want to say, and I'm no Jack Skilly fan, but whatever you want to say about Jack Skilly does bring, when he's playing the way he did when he was a Blackhawk, when he's playing the way he did when he went to Florida initially before he got injured, he's an energy guy. He's a guy who's going to, you know, sprint up and down that wing, that right side. He's going to hit. He's going to send pucks to the net. And if he drives with that puck to the net or if he follows the shot to the net, he does add, especially to a team like Florida, you know, not a, you know, a salary cap team, team that's just trying to work hard and contend. They have to work hard to win games because they're not a salary cap team. They're never going to be loaded, or it doesn't appear they'll ever be loaded with you know, top-end talent. Jack Skilly is he's a better fit in Florida than the Michael Philippe that was playing there at the time. And it probably even the Michael Philippe that we see right now. He is a better fit there. Is he going to score more goals? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But it's a different fit for what Florida. So I don't really think you could judge it strictly based on production. I like the Michael Philippe that we saw in the playoffs, but I need to see it in the regular season too. You know, I make observations based on what I see, and in the regular season he was crap. Yeah, he's responsible defensively and he works hard, but where are the results? And he was much better in the playoffs, granted. But, you know, the Blackhawks in the playoffs, you know, I heard an interview with Patrick Sharp. They talked about playing for pride, and they were proud that they played for pride. It's like, well, play to win. You play for pride. People, you know, teams that play for pride are losers, you know. Marian Hossa question. Chris, how long before Marian Hossa turns into an okay. All right, let's start over again. There's two questions rolled into one. How long before Marian Hossa turns into the elephant on the Blackhawks salary cap at 32 and with 10 years left on his deal? I worry the Blackhawks could soon be stuck with an aging, broken-down, non-producing player. I write this? Non-producing player no one else would want for the price he carries. I still want Hossa on this team next year, and I believe he will have a big bounce-back season with much-needed and well-deserved rest. But if in 2 years he's broken down and ineffective, thus untradeable, he could wind up as bad on the cap as UA and a very unpopular player because of it, and I'd hate to see that. That's Mike. That very well could happen. I don't even know. I don't know if there's anything that I need to add to it. That very well could happen. You know, like Marian Hossa, and we said it before, you know, it happened. I mean, we talked about, you know, 2 years ago, you know, but 2 years ago now, we talked about what the Blackhawks were going to do in that offseason, the 2009 offseason. We talked about it. We thought that they were going to go out and get Marian Hossa because it was a bold move. It was a move that said we're serious about winning and we'll do it at all costs. And that's what that was the message that John McDonough and Rocky Wirtz were trying to get across then. Not too different than, you know, than the message that they were trying to get across when they signed Brian Campbell. Again, you know, you could look at these things now and say, wow, that was a bad move, or wow, I don't know why they did that. That, you know, that strung them up against the cap. You got to understand what they were trying to do at the time. And you know, those moves have consequences down the line. And, you know, yeah, is Brian Campbell overpaid? We've talked about it many times. Sure he is. But he got the deal that he got because there were other teams after him, and the Blackhawks were, you know, desperate to make a statement. So Brian Campbell got the contract that he got. You know, if, you know, he definitely did not have, like many Blackhawks, Brian Campbell definitely did not play well in the first three games, or two and a half, three games of that Vancouver series. But towards the end of it, he came around and he played very well. When Brian Campbell plays well, the Blackhawks are hard to beat. So, you know, Marian Hossa, I too believe, and he has to. I mean, the biggest key next year is Marian Hossa coming back and being great? I mean, they desperately need him. You know, there should be no more excuses. There should have been excuses for Marian Hossa this year, but there should be no more excuses now. You know, going into 2011-12, whatever the best of Marian Hossa is at 32, and when the season hits its halfway point, 33, Marian Hossa turns, he'll turn 33 on January 12th. Whatever the best of Marian Hossa is at age 33, we better get it. And, yeah, when he's 35, 36, and he's still making $7.9 million a year, I don't know. That, you know, like the emailer said, he could be an untradeable asset and something that the Blackhawks really, you know, will have a hard time getting out from under. But if you can get one more year, I mean, I really look at 2011-12 like I did 2009-10. It's almost like a must-win season. Marian Hossa has to pay off again. You know, he really didn't pay off the first time. And if you believe that the Blackhawks were up against it from the very beginning this season, then next year there should be none of those excuses. It should be a win-at-all-cost season again next year. Because, again, Brian Campbell, same thing. You know, he just turned, or he will be 32 here later this month. So, you know, Brian Campbell's not getting any younger. Marian Hossa's not getting any younger. The rest of your team is entering the prime of its career. Duncan Keith will be 28 years old this time next year. You know, Brent Seabrook, 27. These guys are all entering the prime of their careers. But two of your key assets, the guys that are you know, there's no mistaking why they're paid the way they are. They're here to put you over the top, to separate you from every other team in the league and put you at the top echelon. And they need to be that. And the Blackhawks need that return on investment at least one more time before those two either move on or start to lose, you know, depreciating assets that you can't get as much in return from. The Blackhawks need to be back in that Stanley Cup final next year, I think, for that Hossa contract to really pay off. Because, again, you know, you get what you pay for, and if it doesn't pay off, there are consequences. Okay, this is more on Hjalmarsson. Seems everyone is assuming Hjalmarsson is trade bait and will be wearing another uniform next year. Chris, don't forget, absolutely no one saw the Frolik trade coming ahead of time. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Campbell is the one to go. Stan seemed confident, or so confident, that he has no cap concerns this time around. We talked about that earlier. I don't know what he's thinking. No cap concerns this time around, despite evidence to the contrary. I take that to mean he has a trick up his sleeve. Further evidence would be how much praise he's giving Campoli and the fact they rushed Letty up a year early to give him all this experience. Says to me they have a Campbell deal in their back pocket. I don't know. I really would hesitate to do that. Campoli, and I'll agree with I don't agree with Stan Bowman or disagree with Stan Bowman on everything. I agree with his praise of Campoli to a point. The fact that he plays, you know, he's comfortable playing defense on either side. If you have an injury, he can certainly move up into the top, you know, the top four defense. But he's best suited to be on your third pair. A puck mover on your third pair is a luxury that not a lot of teams have. You know, Vancouver had it, and you could see how tough it was to play against their defense. So certainly Campoli on the third pair makes the Black, you know, it looks really good on that Blackhawks team. When you start talking about moving Campbell out, who can do what Campbell can do? You know, a lot of people are negative on Brian Campbell, I think, just because of the contract. You got to watch him play and see how strong and how assertive he is with the puck and how well he moves that puck. And he just gets that puck and turns and goes. I mean, the Blackhawks don't have, you know, he's better at that than Duncan Keith is, especially specifically this year. you know. So if you're going to move Campbell out, what's the plan there? I mean, who? If you're moving Campbell out, then okay, you're keeping Jalmerson. You know, and I would, you know, that contract is what makes Jalmerson almost have to move. You know, do you want to lose Jalmerson? No, absolutely not. It's tough to lose Jalmerson because of, you know, the intangibles that he brings. He could develop into something much better than he is now, or he could be exactly what he is now, which is fine. The problem is that he makes $3.5 million for a guy who, on a great team, is a third-pair guy. If your third pair was Campoli and Jalmerson, that's a great third pair. But you can't have a $3.5 million guy on your third pair. It's $1 million more than what Brent Sopel was making on your third pair. So, you know, we put the question up on the website about, and I should probably go and check that out real quick. I thought it was interesting. We talked about Sam Bowman's. We did a poll on the website. Sam Bowman's number one off-season priority, and we got 341 people voted. I thought the results were kind of interesting. Finishing first with 35% of people said the Blackhawks' number one off-season priority should be acquiring a number two center. Number two, no major changes, improved third and fourth lines. That got 30% of the vote, 101 votes. Moving one of the huge contracts, 66 votes, 19%. Retool and bolster the fourth line, 16% of the vote, coming in last place. I was kind of surprised by that. I thought I'm not surprised by number two center, but, you know, considering that you do have Patrick Sharp there, I think that you do want to retool that fourth line, or your defensive six, and just work on strengthening your third and fourth lines. I think you'd be ahead of the game. That's quite an offseason. You certainly can't do all four of those things, but to move out Jalmerson, you have to find a way to replace the intangibles that he brings as a shot blocker, that selflessness that he brings. Again, you talk about moving out Troy Brouwer. How do you replace his physical, intensity? Jalmerson, yeah, didn't have the greatest season, overpaid, but how do you replace that selflessness? That little physical, you know, intensity, the bang and the crashing that he is willing to do, and even though he didn't do as much of it, but I also think that he was carrying injuries all year long. How do you replace that? You're already soft back there to begin with. So, you know, no, you don't want to move Jalmerson. You'd love to keep him. He just makes too much money because, like, going back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, you know, Sam Bowman, painted himself into a corner where he allowed Jalmerson to get to an offer sheet. And, you know, when teams throw out offer sheets, they really amp up the dough because either, you know, I mean, they want to make it so you don't match it. You know, whatever they can afford to put on that offer sheet so they get the player, that's what they're going to do. So if Crawford gets to an offer sheet just like Jalmerson did, you know that Crawford's going to be overpaid. Because who would give Crawford an offer sheet or the same amount of money that Crawford could get here? You know, so I don't know that you can. You know, it very well could be that Bowman has a trade for Campbell in his back pocket. But again, the problem that I had with Nick Leddy all year long is that if, you know, what do you want Nick Leddy to be? Do you want Nick Leddy to be the next Brian Campbell? Is he ultimately going to move into the Campbell spot? I would think that that's where you're aiming for him to be. Well, then what do you want? You know, what does he have to be? He has to be a guy who's pushing 25, 26 minutes a night, who's playing both on your penalty kill, as Brian Campbell did this year, and your power play, and is a puck lugger. And isn't making mistakes. So what would you know, in a perfect world, where should Leddy be at the age of 19, 20? He should be in the minors. If he's not going to be in college, he should be in the minors. playing 25 minutes a night, both on the PK and the power play, and being the guy to lug the mail every single night and playing in all different kinds of situations so that when he comes up, he's ready, not to immediately take Ryan Campbell, but to play some of that role. If Nick Leddy, I'll tell you this, if Nick Leddy is on the Blackhawks from the start of the season in 2011-12, which I assume he will be, and he's not on one of those two power play units, you know, that, I don't even know what to call it, but it's a travesty of what they're doing to Nick Leddy. Because how is Nick Leddy supposed to be better, to get better, if he's not playing in those situations? And that's always been the thing. Do you want Nick Leddy to be, you know, as Scotty Bowman said, the next Phil Housley, or do you want him to be the next Chris Campoli? Take your pick. But you gotta give the guy time to develop. You know, Stan Bowman double talks. He talks about these guys need to go back and mature and have time to develop. But yet, he's not giving that to Nick Leddy. You know, whatever. Last one, and then we'll get out of here. I can't believe I did an hour and a half on my own. Hey, Block, since you were right on with Ben Smith being the next prospect from Rockford to be called up and make an impact in the Hawks lineup, who's next? It was interesting to hear Ryan Stanton's name on this week's show, last week's podcast. I hadn't seen much of him as a highly touted prospect. In your estimation, is it Stanton, or will Klinkhammer, Makarov, or Brophy surprise us in training camp? I highly doubt it'll be Brophy unless he's coming back on a tryout, and I think that there'll be a place somewhere around the league where Brophy will get a contract from somebody, but I don't see it being Chicago, but we'll see. I'll say this much about Brophy. Brophy has the intangibles of what the Blackhawks are looking for, especially for a fourth liner. But, he hasn't asserted himself. He's had 4 years in the Blackhawks minor league system now. In 4 years, he just hasn't asserted himself. He came in as an offensive guy, as, you know, an offensive player in junior hockey. He came to the pro level. His skating wasn't anywhere near it needed to be for him to be an offensive player in the pro game. So, you know, his first year, it was a big transition for him, playing mostly fourth line and, you know, just trying to catch up to the pro game. So the first year was a big transition. The second year, he had to learn how to, you know, basically accept the fact that he wasn't going to be an offensive player and learn the defensive aspects of the game. So that was his second year. His third year, you thought that it would start to come together for him and he'd pitch in more offensively, be a good two-way forward, and then hopefully in his fourth year, challenge for a job in Chicago. And he never did that this year. That's why I think he's moving on. But, you know, who knows? I mean, they give him another chance. Maybe he'll, the fifth year will be the charm. I really think that Klinkhammer should stick around. And, again, the Blackhawks are really going to be penny-pinching on that fourth line next year. So Klinkhammer would be a prime candidate. You know, I think he's more physical. Mike Peck talked last week about Rob Klinkhammer not being very physical. I think he's physical. Is he a guy that's storming the rink, knocking people on their ass? No, but he's not afraid to use his body. His body is always one of the reasons we talked about Rob Klinkhammer having all those breakaways. How does he get those breakaways? You know, especially shorthanded. He had a ton of them shorthanded. It's because he's quick enough, he's a good enough skater, and he's smart enough to get into the shooting lanes, and he uses his body. Blocks a lot of shots, and he blocks passes. You know, he gets his stick, and he gets his legs in the lanes, and he knocks down a lot of pucks with his body. Not afraid to use his body. I think that, we saw it a little bit when he came up with the Blackhawks. If you come up and you put him in a fourth-line role and tell him, well, this is how you're going to stay in the lineup. You gotta work hard along those walls, make body contact, win a puck, and then just get to the front of the net. I think he can do that, and you hope that he could develop into a guy that can help you a little bit out on the penalty kill, because the Blackhawks need that. They can't have Taves and Hossa jumping over the boards every time there's a penalty kill. It's nice to think that those guys are good enough to do that, and, you know, the bravado of my guy, you know, our best players do all this stuff, but we saw the consequences. It takes a lot out of these guys. I don't know that, to answer this question, though, I don't know that there's one guy that's, you know, a lot of it depends on these guys in the off season. If Igor Makarov has a terrific off season and has a stellar training camp, if he comes back, first and foremost, if he comes back, he could win a job, but it's hard to tell with these guys, like, how much they'll improve in an off season. The Rockford guys, I want to see Makarov have a good offensive, you know, half a season in Rockford. I want to see him consistently score and be effective offensively, and then I'll say, okay, he's ready to move up. He's just started to come around offensively at the end of the season, being strong on the puck, being confident with it, you know. So I don't think he's ready. Beach isn't ready. Brian Connolly's too small. Maybe Stanton. You know, maybe Stanton, if the Blackhawks do have a spot, you know, if something similar happens this year where they just need a guy to start the season, play 15, 20 games, it could wind up being Stanton. So, I guess maybe I'd lean there. It's not Brandon Peary. It's not Sean Lalonde. They got guys there that need work. And, you know, the Blackhawks have enough, you know, in Chicago that those guys have the time. It affords them the time to get the work in, put the work in, and then bring them up, when it's time. It's just like Nick Leddy. You look at the Blackhawks season, the Blackhawks, you know, needed the Minnesota Wild to win to get him into the playoffs. If Nick Leddy was in Rockford all year, they probably suffer the same fate. It's better off that these guys are in the minors getting their reps in, playing a lot of minutes, get the experience. So when they come up, they're ready to make a positive difference. And you're not just giving someone some ice time and saying, oh, wow, you know, this is great, they're getting experience. No, when they come up, you want them to be effective. And, you don't want to have to protect them in important games and important minutes of hockey games like the Blackhawks had to do with Nick Leddy this year. That's going to be it. We're going to be back next Monday. May the 16th, we'll be back. I think we're going to do Mondays, but that's subject to change. Working on a really big guest, either for this coming week, the 16th, or the 23rd, the week after. Thanks again to everybody for joining us. And I don't know. I think that's it. We have more audio here, but just don't think. Yeah. All right, well, we'll just go. Thanks everybody for listening, and I don't know where the superstar is, and I don't know.
Let's get fucking like a monkey.
Probably out drinking. That's where I would imagine the superstar is right now. All right, everybody. Thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll be back next week, Monday, May 16th at 8 o'clock here at blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. Chris Block signing off. Thanks, everybody. Good night or good day or good train ride, whatever you're doing right now. Thanks, everybody. Good night.